Welcome to NTD News Today. Here are today's top stories. President Trump and leaders around the world are reacting to the passing of Pope Francis. And Trump and First Lady Melania Trump host the first White House Easter egg roll of his second term, welcoming guests to the annual tradition. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth responding after a new report says he shared military information in a second Signal group chat. The founder of the World Economic Forum has resigned. The annual gathering in the Swiss resort of Davos looks for a new chair. The Chinese regime says it will sanction U.S. officials, lawmakers, and others over their stances on Hong Kong. President Trump saying he hopes Russia and Ukraine will make a peace deal as soon as this week. It comes just days after Trump warned the U.S. might abandon its peace efforts.
This is NTD News Today, live from our global headquarters in New York City.
Today is Monday, April 21st. I'm Stephanie Cox. Pope Francis died today at the age of 88. The Vatican made the announcement in a video statement. NTD's Daniel Monahan has more on the life and legacy of the first Latin American leader of the Roman Catholic Church.
Dear brothers and sisters, it is with profound sadness I must announce the death of our Holy Father Francis.
Hours before he died, Pope Francis emerged on Easter Sunday to bless the thousands of people in St. Peter's Square in the Vatican.
Buona Pasqua.
The former cardinal from Argentina had been in hospital for several weeks. He had recently survived a serious bout of double pneumonia. Francis was elected Pope on March 13, 2013. He was immediately praised as a man of humility, making his first appearance in simple white vestments instead of the more opulent royal vestments of his predecessors. His first Easter, he changed a Holy Thursday ritual where the pontiff washes and kisses the feet of 12 clergymen in remembrance of Jesus' washing the feet of the 12 apostles. Pope Francis instead washed and kissed the feet of 12 prisoners, including some Muslims. The following year, he presided over the marriage of several couples who had been living together and had children out of wedlock. Some of his teachings, specifically on the blessing of homosexual couples, his stance against the U.S.'s crackdowns on illegal immigration, and his criticisms of capitalism, sparked dissent among Christians. He also received criticism over a controversial deal with Communist China. The agreement gave Beijing influence over bishop appointments. He leaves behind a global church 1.3 billion strong and a legacy that strove to inspire social and political reforms in and out of that church, rooted in his interpretation of Jesus Christ's teachings on mercy. While he struggled with internal dissent, Francis drew huge crowds on his many foreign travels as he promoted interfaith dialogue and peace. Pope Francis's chosen resting place is the Basilica of St. Mary Major, a site dear to him because of his devotion to the Mother Mary. In a break with tradition, Francis will become the first pope in over a century to be buried outside the Vatican. Pope Francis's funeral is still expected to take place in St. Peter's Square, in front of the Basilica of St. Peter, where most of his predecessors rest. In the coming days, more than 100 cardinals from around the world will be called to gather in the Vatican Palace to elect the new pope. Completely secluded from the outside world, they will pray, discuss, and vote in a secret ballot. This election requires a two-thirds majority vote and can take several days, with up to 4 votes happening in a single day. Ballots are burned after each vote, sending a smoke signal to the outside world. Black smoke means no majority. White smoke means a majority has been reached. Once the winning candidate accepts the position, the news is declared Habemus Papam, which translates as, "We have a Pope." Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
Leaders around the world are reacting to the Pope's passing. NTD's Daniel Monahan again with this report.
The White House shared a memorial post for the late Pope Francis, writing, "Rest in peace," alongside photos of President Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance meeting the pontiff. President Trump later reacted to the news on Truth Social, writing, "Rest in peace, Pope Francis. May God bless him and all who loved him."
I just signed an executive order putting the flags of our country, all of them, all federal flags and state flags, at half-mast in honor of Pope Francis. So he was a good man, worked hard. He loved the world, and it's an honor to do that.
Vice President J.D. Vance also expressed condolences, saying he was happy to see him yesterday. This was in reference to a meeting between the two on Sunday, one of the last public appearances from Francis. Vance wrote that he would always remember Pope Francis for a homily he gave in the very early days of COVID, calling it really quite beautiful. Vance added, "May God rest his soul." Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said all flags on government buildings will fly at half staff on Tuesday as a sign of respect for the Pope.
Pope Francis' compassion embraced all humanity, and today he will be mourned by Catholics and non-Catholics alike. He urged us to remember all we hold in common, and he asked the world to hear the cry of the earth, our common home.
French President Emmanuel Macron said he wanted to express the great pain shared by people in France and across the planet.
He, throughout his pontificate, stood alongside the most vulnerable, the most fragile, with great humility and a very special sense, in these times of war and brutality, a very special sense of the other, yes, and of the most fragile.
Israeli President Isaac Herzog also sent his condolences.
And I know we share the deepest hope that his memory inspire acts of kindness and unity, dialogue between peoples, and hope for humanity.
King Charles III praised the Pope for his work on safeguarding the planet. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz wrote that the Catholic Church and the world lose an advocate for the weak, a reconciling and a warm-hearted person. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky praised Francis, saying he knew how to give hope, ease suffering through prayer, and foster unity. Russian President Vladimir Putin also sent his condolences on the passing of the Pope. A Kremlin spokesperson said they met several times and treated each other with great respect. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan praised Francis as a spiritual leader who valued dialogue between different groups of faith and took initiative on humanitarian tragedies. Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
The founder of the World Economic Forum resigned today. The Geneva-based institution announced earlier this month that Klaus Schwab would be stepping down. Schwab established the World Economic Forum in 1971. The founder's aim was to create a forum for policymakers and top corporate executives to tackle major global issues. The forum's critics say, among other things, that the annual Davos gathering is elitist and doesn't address the issues of everyday people. A committee to appoint a future chair has been established. The forum's vice chairman will take over as interim chairman following Schwab's resignation. New developments in the controversy surrounding Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth sharing information on military strikes and signal chats. On Sunday, the New York Times reported that Hegseth shared information on the Yemen attacks in a second group chat. The Times cited anonymous sources in its report. Hegseth and a White House spokesperson have responded.
See, this is what the media does. They take anonymous sources from disgruntled former employees, and then they try to slash and burn people and ruin their reputations. Not going to work with me, because we're changing the Defense Department, putting the Pentagon back in the hands of warfighters, and anonymous smears from disgruntled former employees on old news doesn't matter.
The president absolutely has confidence in Secretary Hegseth. I spoke to him about it this morning, and he stands strongly behind it.
Last month, The Atlantic reported that Hegseth shared details about the attacks on Yemen in a group that included the outlet's editor-in-chief. Trump officials say the journalist was mistakenly added. The Pentagon says no classified information was shared in either of the two chat groups, adding that Sunday's New York Times report relies on sources which, quote, appear to have a motive to sabotage the secretary and the president's agenda. Administration officials also say the sources were recently fired from the Pentagon, as you'd heard Hegseth say just now, and the Pentagon says that's why they're trying to discredit Hegseth. The White House criticized media outlets, saying they're trying to resurrect a non-story. Some Democrats are now calling for Hegseth's resignation or termination. They say his actions endangered the lives of American service members. The Pentagon's Inspector General is currently investigating Hegseth over that chat. And Vice President J.D. Vance began a four-day visit to India today. The trip includes high-level talks with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, as well as New Delhi, as New Delhi looks to sidestep U.S. tariffs through an early trade deal. NTD's Daniel Monahan reports.
Vice President Vance's talks with Indian Prime Minister Modi are expected to focus on trade and defense, key points in the bilateral agenda laid out in February during Modi's visit to Washington. The agenda promotes fairness in their two-way trade and growing their defense partnership. India is reportedly willing to reduce tariffs on over half of its U.S. imports, valued at nearly $42 billion last year, in a bid to secure a trade agreement with the Trump administration. Beyond politics, the vice president and his family will visit the Taj Mahal and attend a wedding in Jaipur. Vance's wife, Usha, is the daughter of Indian immigrants. Her family's hometown of Vadluru is buzzing with anticipation.
We came to know that Usha Garu has come to Delhi today, and we expect her to come to this village to see her ancestors' temple and other lands. We eagerly wait for her arrival.
Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
The Chinese regime says it will retaliate with sanctions against U.S. officials, lawmakers, and leaders of non-governmental organizations for their stances on Hong Kong. The retaliation is also a response after the U.S. in March sanctioned six Chinese and Hong Kong officials. The U.S. says the officials were involved in transnational repression and the erosion of rights in Hong Kong. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said retaliatory actions were made according to the regime's anti-foreign sanctions law. Beijing did not provide more details on who is targeted. Both the first Trump administration and the Biden administration sanctioned Chinese officials over the regime's repression of civil liberties and freedoms in Hong Kong. More U.S.-Iran nuclear talks planned after the weekend's second round in Rome. A panel of Middle East experts break its sit down. The Trump administration is defending its deportation of Kilmar Abrego Garcia. They're arguing due process was not overlooked. A storm brings severe weather to parts of the South and Midwest. Three people were killed in Oklahoma. All that and more after this break. Iran's foreign minister and the U.S. special envoy over the weekend agreed to a third round of talks. The U.S. wants to stop Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Is it possible? Joining us to discuss is geopolitical strategist and retired Colonel Darren Gobb and Middle East expert Michael Pregent. Good to have you both with us. Technical discussions on sanctions relief and nuclear limits are set to begin this week. Darren, we'll start with you. What does that indicate to you about the dynamics between the negotiators, which is currently so hidden from public view?
Yeah, no, it's this seems like we're going back in history again and repeating much of what has happened in the past. This time, Trump has made it very specific that he's not in any hurry to get into a war with Iran or bomb them, but he's also making sure he moves pieces and parts in place. Such as in Diego Garcia, to make sure to send a message that he's willing to enforce the idea that Iran should never have any nuclear weapons at all. My concern with these kinds of negotiations is that sometimes Iran and nations like that use these negotiations as delaying tactics in order to get further down the road towards their ultimate goal. But you have to take part in them. And that's really what I get out of this is just like Israel had to work with Hamas and try to get Hamas to the table and deal with them, we have to try with Iran and say that in the end it may fail, but we said we tried.
Now, Michael, when we spoke last, you said the U.S. should take a strong stance in these talks and demand Iran disarm and stop supporting terrorism. Given the topic of the current talks, what's your sense of worst and best case scenarios and how you think this is going at the moment?
Well, thanks for having me. I agree that anything Iran is doing right now when it comes to Witkoff is a delay tactic. We can hear it in the language. Let's get an initial framework in place. And Iran's already putting their red lines on the table, saying that any language on ballistic missiles or terrorism or dismantling its nuclear program in its entirety, Iran walks away. We are a $20 trillion economy. Iran is a $400 billion economy. We need to be able to tell Tehran directly, I'm for direct talks, that this is what you're going to do or else. I know that sounds like tough language, but it's worked in the past. And the one thing that I would do if I was sitting down at that negotiating table is I would say, you need to put pressure on your proxy, Hamas, to release all hostages before we even start talking about this. And none of that's happening. Witkoff is squandering away Trump's bravado, Trump's capital that he had in the Middle East after taking out Qasem Soleimani, and the capital that he now has after dealing directly with the Houthis. That capital needs to be represented by Secretary Rubio, by someone else. If Witkoff is good cop and Trump is bad cop, I'm waiting for good cop to show up.
It almost seems that the threats that the U.S. has placed down, that it could bomb Iran's nuclear sites if a deal is not reached, that this is almost too terrible of a proposition in the end. Do you think that could be making the U.S. more timid in these talks than they could be? Darren, start with you.
Well, it's certainly possible. I think what they're looking at is, do we start a broader regional war by bombing Iran? I look at this from the perspective of, if you leave Iran go unchecked, then you're going to end up with some sort of a weapon, nuclear or otherwise, regardless, that will guarantee you expand the conflict in the Middle East. So if Israel leads, and we agree that it's time to strike Iran's nuclear facilities, let Israel lead this, and again, do what they did to Iran the first time, is demonstrate that their air defense systems and their other systems are largely ineffective, I would rather take the risk of destroying Iran's capabilities and hope the Iranian people rise up against their own dictators, then let Iran, who is out of control, basically, have a weapon like this they could use.
And yet, from what we know so far, it does seem like Iran is pretty close to developing that nuclear weapon. So in that sense, Michael, what's your response to Darren's comment here?
Well, the ugly truth is Iran has always been close to a nuclear weapon. Even before the JCPOA, they were 6 weeks away. Inside of the JCPOA, they were 6 weeks away. Now in violation of the JCPOA, we're the only country that left the JCPOA. Russia's there, China's there, and Europe is still there. And none of those countries have imposed sanctions on Iran for violating the JCPOA. So they're always weeks away. And that's the goal. Be weeks away so that you can get concessions from the West. And that playbook has served them very effectively. I would also say that this is what war with Iran looks like. We're already at war with Iran. Their proxies have already attacked U.S. positions in Iraq, in Syria. Iran has attacked U.S. allies. And this is the extent of what they can do, short of launching attacks from Iran inside of Iraq against U.S. installations. But that would be such a gross miscalculation by Tehran that it would require a very heavy U.S. military response.
Yeah, so Trump had left the JCPOA saying that Iran was not complying, despite the agreement being that Iran would get some kind of sanctions relief. And now we're talking about sanctions relief again. How damaging could sanctions relief be this time around if it does follow through, considering now it's Trump whose administration is negotiating this potential relief? Darren, start with you.
Yeah, it's like always, as soon as you take the pressure off someone like Iran, they're going to use that to their advantage. They've always considered to be deal-making and negotiating to be part of the strategy of deception. And so if they can get any kind of sanctions relief taken off them, they're going to use that funding to advance their agenda of terrorism across the Middle East and leaving their dictators in charge, because that's really all they care about. They don't care about the Iranian people. They don't care about peace. And they may end up taking those also some of that funding and rebuilding what they can of those proxy forces around Israel, because Israel is their target and always will be. We have to recognize that.
Yeah, and this is all sounding pretty alarming. Michael, is there any kind of sense of hope here in this current dynamic that's taking place?
Yeah, we have all the leverage. Iran doesn't have any leverage here. We have all the leverage, and for some reason, we keep ceding that leverage to Iran. We make them equal partners at the table, and they're not. This is very easy. This is a $400 billion economy that is in the tank. It's real is 1 million reals to one U.S. dollar. It is charging their Iranian population so much more for gas at this point in time. So they're desperate. And we need to realize that we have that leverage. And for some reason, we keep ceding it. So I hope, I don't ever like to say hope. Hope is not a strategy or a method. But if Witkoff is good cop, I'm waiting for bad cop to show up because we have all the leverage.
Yeah, Trump did campaign on this message of peace through strength. And many people are hoping, you know, they voted him in. They're hoping this could work. Darren, what do you think might be in the way of this peace through strength really taking effect in these talks?
Well, one of the things that's in the way is that over the Biden administration, frankly, and during some of the Trump administration, because of the distractions that were thrown at him, there has been this tightening of relationships between Russia, China, Iran, and other nations who have created really an economic bloc to help support each other. And they know that they, for now, have the ability to fall back on those allies and friendships that they've built over time. That's also the greatest weakness, though, because if you sever those lines at some point, now they're on their own, it changes the equation significantly. But I agree with Michael. At some point, we have to remember what is respected in the Middle East. It's not talking across the table, although you have to do that. You have to first show strength, demonstrate the willingness to use it, and then come to them and say, okay, do this, or here's the response.
And Michael, as we've been talking about this, you know, the American people are aware of the Iranian regime's threat, its intentions, and its lack of trust. Iran is saying it's happy to build trust, but the regime enriches uranium to 60% at least already. It's reduced international monitoring. The facts are there for people to see that trust may be pretty hard to build. So what, if anything, could it take to build trust? And how much of a role does public opinion play in these negotiations at this point in time?
Well, if the president campaigned on not starting any wars when he was president from 2016 to 2020. And then we saw what happened under the Biden administration. And I don't know whether that's an actual effect of Trump telling our enemies don't start anything while I'm president and then them having a permissive environment when Biden takes over. I'm concerned that if Trump's trying to make sure that no new wars start on his watch, he's basically giving our enemies an economic stimulus lifeline. He's giving them the ability to refit, rearm, regroup, and strategize for the day after Trump. So I would like to see the Trump administration put in policies that prevent a war after Trump leaves, not one that just keeps our enemies in check while he's president. And then the day after building up all this economic wealth, all this capital, that they're able to go into other countries. And that's my concern.
A deep topic with deep roots and much to speak about, many new developments. Thank you so much for your time today. Darren Gobb, Michael Pregent, good to speak with you as always.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Steph.
And now to the Supreme Court ruling that put deportations under the Alien Enemies Act on hold. Justice Alito criticized the court for acting, quote, hastily and prematurely. He called the ruling legally questionable. Alito was joined by Justice Clarence Thomas in a dissent posted on the High Court's website early yesterday. The Supreme Court's ruling put on hold any action involving a group of Venezuelans held in Texas, at least for now. It came in response to an emergency appeal from the ACLU. The group argued that immigration authorities appeared to be restarting removals under the Alien Enemies Act. The Supreme Court told the Trump administration not to deport the alleged members of Tren de Aragua until further notice. The court issued the ruling around 1 a.m. Saturday morning. Alito argued that the post-midnight decision didn't allow lower courts to weigh in or give the opposing party a chance to be heard. The Alien Enemies Act allows the U.S. to quickly remove any foreigners that authorities deem a threat, specifically for use during wartime. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court said deportations could only move forward if detainees had a chance to present their case in court and were given a reasonable amount of time to do so. And we move now to an update on Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the illegal immigrant whose deportation has caused some controversy. The Trump administration says it was justified in sending Abrego Garcia back to El Salvador. Here are the details.
The Trump administration is defending the deportation of an illegal immigrant. This comes in the wake of pressure from Democrats to secure the return of Kilmar Obrego Garcia from El Salvador. President Trump took to social media to say Democrats are, quote, falsely making Kilmar Armando Obrego Garcia out to be a very sweet and innocent person, which is a total, blatant, and dangerous lie. He said two courts found that Obrego Garcia is a member of the MS-13 gang, something he and his wife deny. Senator Chris Van Hollen traveled last week to El Salvador to meet with Obrego Garcia. He told ABC News Sunday he isn't defending Obrego Garcia, but his right to due process. Trump's border czar Tom Holman said Friday the Constitution and the law were followed in Obrego Garcia's deportation. This comes after the Trump administration initially said it made an administrative error in deporting him. Holman said on ABC News, since Obrego Garcia was deported under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, the length of due process was shorter.
The procedure under Alien Enemies Act is less than it is during a Title VIII removal proceeding. And we're following the rules of the Alien Enemies Act. Again, I think this administration has followed the law. They're using statutes enacted by Congress, signed by a president, to remove the terrorists from this country.
Meanwhile, a State Department official told a federal judge Obrego Garcia is no longer being housed in El Salvador's terrorism confinement center. The official cited comments made by Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen, who said authorities have moved him to a different facility where he has his own room, bed, and furniture. The update on Obrego Garcia's condition is part of a federal judge's order directing the Trump administration to provide daily updates. This weekend, the Trump administration filed a response to a Supreme Court order blocking the deportation of a group of Venezuelans. The administration says the men are gang members, but the Supreme Court directed the government not to remove any of them until given further notice. The decision came in response to the American Civil Liberties Union, who are suing on behalf of the Venezuelans. The Trump administration is urging the court to review the order and to clarify it only applies to the Alien Enemies Act and not other deportations. El Salvador is currently holding hundreds of illegal immigrants deported from the U.S. President Nayib Bukele has proposed swapping Venezuelan gang members for political prisoners held in Venezuela. In a social media post, Bukele said he's open to sending all 252 Venezuelans being held in El Salvador back to their home country. In exchange, he wants an equal number of prisoners he says were detained for opposing Nicolas Maduro's controversial re-election. Venezuela has already indicated it has no plans to take up Bukele's offer. Instead, it once again demanded the immediate release of all Venezuelans in Salvadoran custody.
Four Democratic lawmakers arrived in El Salvador today to advocate for the release of Kilmar Obrego Garcia. Representatives Maxwell Frost of Florida, Robert Garcia of California, Yasemin Ansari of Arizona, and Maxine Dexter of Oregon said they hope to facilitate Garcia's return to the United States. Frost called President Trump's deportations a, quote, government-funded kidnapping program. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt defended the administration's actions in an interview with Fox News on Monday. Leavitt told Fox, quote, we did not make a mistake. We have always maintained that this was an individual who needed to be deported from our country, unquote. And the Supreme Court today will consider the legality of a provision of Obamacare, formerly called the Affordable Care Act. At issue is whether health insurers should be required to cover preventive medical care, such as cancer screenings. The Affordable Care Act marked former President Obama's signature legislative achievement. However, a lower court determined last year that the Preventative Services Task Force is composed of members who are not validly appointed. The task force has a major hand in choosing what services will be covered. The group's 16 members are selected by the Secretary of Health and Human Services without Senate confirmation. Several Texas Christians and two small businesses sued in federal court in 2020 to challenge the task force's structure. The federal government appealed last year's Fifth Circuit decision. The challenge is the latest in a years-long fight to repeal the 2010 law. Minnesota's gun ban for adults under 21 years old will remain blocked. The Supreme Court today rejected an appeal from Minnesota asking to revive the state's ban on gun carry permits for young adults. In July last year, the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously determined the 2003 law violated the Second and 14th Amendments. The ruling said Minnesota couldn't legally prevent those aged 18 to 20 years old from having a public carry permit due to their age. The state of Minnesota appealed that decision, saying the appeals court didn't take into account a recent Supreme Court decision that changed the standards courts must consider for gun regulations. However, the High Court declined to review the appeals court's ruling, which means the ban stays in place. Turning to weather-related news, powerful storms have hit parts of the South and Midwest. Three people are dead in Oklahoma, including a 12-year-old boy and his mother. They died this weekend after their vehicle became trapped in floodwaters and was swept under a bridge. Rescuers say they responded to at least a dozen calls for people trapped in their vehicles because of rising water. The storm produced tornadoes, heavy rain, and hail in Oklahoma and Texas. The heavy rain and 70-mile-an-hour winds also swept through parts of Arkansas, Illinois, and Missouri. Missouri, Louisiana, and Virginia each reporting their first measles cases of 2025 over the weekend. All three cases were linked with international travel. 27 states have now reported at least one case so far. The Missouri case is a child with an unknown vaccination status. The Louisiana case is an adult who was not vaccinated against the virus. The patient was isolated but not hospitalized. Meanwhile, Virginia's case involved a child aged 4 or under who recently traveled internationally, and officials did not say whether that child was vaccinated. As of April 18th, CDC data shows the United States has seen about 800 measles cases this year. An outbreak in West Texas has driven the numbers with almost 600 cases. The website Statista reported 285 cases in 2024 and over 1,200 cases in 2019. Norway's prime minister and finance minister are expected at the White House this week. The Nordic leaders will speak with President Trump on a host of issues amid his global trade shakeup. And the Chinese Communist Party provides a critical lifeline to oppressive regimes around the world. We take a dive into the link between the CCP and Venezuela. A second Boeing jet intended for a Chinese airline heads back to the U.S. amid a tariff war between the two countries. Where the jet is heading next after the break. I'm Stephanie Cox, and this is World Watch. President Trump says he hopes Russia and Ukraine will make a peace deal as soon as this week. That's his U.S. delegation is set to travel to Europe this week. Trump took to social media yesterday, writing, "Hopefully Russia and Ukraine will make a deal this week. Both will then start to do big business with the United States of America." Just on Friday, Trump said the U.S. would abandon peace efforts if either side refused to cooperate in reaching a peace deal. On Saturday, Russia and Ukraine agreed on an Easter Sunday ceasefire. But last night, both sides accused each other of violating that truce thousands of times. The fighting reportedly never stopped. Special envoy to Russia and Ukraine, General Keith Kellogg, says delegates are now set to travel to London this week. The representatives are scheduled to hold talks aimed at closing a peace deal between Kyiv and Moscow. Norway's prime minister and finance minister will both meet with President Trump in Washington this week. The prime minister's office said the White House meeting will cover NATO, the war in Ukraine, and trade, among other issues. The prime minister's office said the meeting is set for Thursday. The Trump administration originally announced a 15% tariff on Norwegian goods imported into the United States. The duties are part of the administration's wider global shakeup with trading partners around the world. Trump lowered the tariff to 10% for a 90-day period. The decrease is consistent with his approach toward other countries that appear to be willing to negotiate. And South Korean authorities say they found Chinese products disguised as made in Korea. The country's customs agency says it's seeing an increase in attempts to bypass U.S. tariffs this way. Check it out.
As South Korea is geographically close to China, we believe there are many cases that goods from China go through South Korea for disguised export attempts. In addition, Southeast Asian countries may also seek to route shipments through South Korea, and we see a growing risk of such cases occurring in those regions as well.
The Korea Customs Service says it found more than $20 million worth of violations in the first quarter of 2025. 97% were heading to the U.S. A Korean customs official says the agency plans to strengthen preventive measures. A special task force has been launched to develop more targeted responses aimed at protecting domestic companies. South Korea is planning to hold trade talks with the U.S. this week. Seoul's trade ministry said yesterday the country's finance and trade ministers will meet U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer and Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. South Korea is hoping to negotiate President Trump's 25% tariff. It's currently capped at 10%, but only for 90 days, as with the other countries. South Korea will be one of the first countries to negotiate the U.S. over Trump's new tariffs. And a second Boeing jet intended for use by a Chinese airline was tracked heading back to the U.S. It appears to be another victim of tariff tensions. Data from flight tracking website AirNav Radar shows that 737 MAX 8 jet landed in the U.S. territory of Guam today after leaving a Boeing completion center near Shanghai. A 737 MAX that was painted for China's Xiamen Airlines was sent back to the U.S. yesterday from the same location. It landed in Seattle. A spokesperson for Xiamen Airlines confirmed that two planes marked for the carrier had gone to the U.S. but declined to provide a reason. Boeing could find a replacement buyer in Malaysia Airlines. The company said it was talking to the manufacturer about acquiring jets that could become available should Chinese airlines stop taking deliveries. And turning to London, Falun Gong practitioners on Saturday paraded through the British capital with a message calling for an end to the long-running persecution of Falun Gong, or Falun Dafa, in China. NTD's international correspondent Malcolm Hudson sent us this report.
The parade behind me here is raising awareness about the persecution of Falun Gong practitioners in China. For nearly 26 years, followers of this faith have been subjected to brutal abuses and murder at the hands of the Chinese Communist Party. And here in London, they're appealing for an end to the persecution so that they may practice their values of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance freely in China again.
Falun Gong, which is also known as Falun Dafa, is a traditional spiritual discipline that includes meditative exercises. It was once practiced freely and openly in China by an estimated 70 to 100 million people. This parade commemorates a peaceful appeal on April 25th, 1999. At the time, Falun Gong had been slandered by the media, and around 45 practitioners were detained and beaten by police during a period of increasing repression. Other practitioners sought their release and to uphold the freedom to practice Falun Gong.
They wanted to redress this. They had already gone to the media to actually tell the truth about what Falun Gong really was and how they benefited, but they were directed to Beijing to actually formally appeal.
10,000 practitioners made the journey. Miss Han was there that day and expressed it truly was a peaceful appeal.
The whole process was very quiet, with no violent behavior, no slogans, no chanting. This is what I personally experienced.
After a small group met with China's premier, the detained practitioners were released and assurances given that they could practice freely. But the appeal was used by the Chinese Communist Party as a pretext to begin an all-out persecution in July 1999. Since then, practitioners have been arrested, tortured, killed, and even used as a source of organs for transplants in a state-sanctioned trade.
Falun Gong has been persecuted for 26 years, and now the persecution in China is still very serious. Many practitioners are still being arrested, and the live organ harvesting of Falun Gong practitioners is quite evil.
Members of the public shared their impressions after signing a petition calling to end the persecution.
Personally, I think it seems harmless, and it would be the same as anyone here going to the gym and performing yoga or Tai Chi or meditation.
I think we have to find those people who are doing to these people and taking their organs, and they should be lawfully being punished, and it can't keep going on. It's really awful.
And I just heard this story, what happened in China. So he just want to do exercise at the government. He take over them. How you cannot sign? How you cannot stop and support in some way?
The more people that actually sign up, the more it's going to be a change. You have to make people aware that this is happening.
And this change is what the appeal seeks, to end the persecution and uphold the freedom to believe. Malcolm Hudson, NTD News, London.
Still to come, President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump host the first White House Easter egg roll of his second term, welcoming guests to the annual tradition. We'll have that for you right after this break. President Trump praised Pope Francis as a good man who loved the world and ordered state and federal flags around the country to fly at half-staff. Trump made the comments while presiding over an Easter ceremony at the White House, during which he also said, religion is coming back to America.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, and a very happy Easter to everyone. It was a beautiful day yesterday, and it's a beautiful day today. We don't have to worry about sunburn, but we looks like it's not going to be raining. It's going to be really something special. 40,000, 42,000 people are expected all throughout the day, and it's an honor to have you. I just signed an executive order putting the flags of our country, all of them, all federal flags and state flags, at half-mast in honor of Pope Francis. So he was a good man, worked hard. He loved the world, and it's an honor to do that. I want to thank everybody for being here. This is some band. I've heard this band actually indirectly for 4 years and very directly now for 4.5. And I like the direct method even better. But the Marine Corps band is very, very special. Thank you very much. What a great job. Thank you. Thank you. I also want to thank the National Park Service, the job they do in making everything so beautiful and spiffy. And I'm very difficult when it comes to that. I will tell you, I'm very, very difficult. And I say they have done an incredible job. You just have to look around and see. And I just want to give a special thank you to our great First Lady who organized this entire event. She worked very, very hard on it. She worked very hard. I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm working on the egg roll. I said, that sounds like a lot of fun. And we're going to have a lot of fun in just a couple of minutes. But again, our country is doing very well. We had the highest number of recruits, enlistments that we've had in, I think, 28 or 29 years. And I'm sure we're going to actually beat that number. It's all happened since November 5th. It's all happened. Enrollment in the military is at a record. And enrollment in the police force, fire forces, and all of the different law enforcement groups. We're setting records. And 6 months ago, we couldn't get anybody. And now we're setting records. That's sort of testament to what's happening in terms of the spirit of our country. We love our country. And it's been something very, very special. And speaking of special, Easter is special. And it's one of our favorite days. It's one of our favorite periods of time. We're honoring Jesus Christ, and we're going to honor Jesus Christ very powerfully throughout our lives, all throughout our lives, not just now, all throughout our lives. We're bringing religion back in America. We're bringing a lot of things back, but religion is coming back to America. That's why you see the kind of numbers that you're seeing, the spirit and the kind of numbers that you're seeing. So we're going to come down and join you right now. But I just want to wish everybody once again, happy Easter and enjoy your lives. We're going to have a great 4 years. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
President Trump, do you remain confident?
Oh, total.
President Trump,
why do you even ask a question like that? We have recruitments that's at an all-time high. The spirit in the armed forces is fantastic. No, great confidence.
President Trump, you saw your message. Secretary Hegseth using Signal to discuss those military plans.
Are you bringing up Signal again? I thought they gave that up 2 weeks ago.
There was a new report this weekend that he used in a separate chat that included some family members.
It's the same old stuff from the media. That's an old one. Try finding something new.
Sir, your message to Catholics, sir, mourning the loss of Pope Francis. Your message to Catholics, sir.
We love you all. We're with you all. They were with me during the election, as you know, very strongly. And it's just an honor to have the support of the Catholics. And I feel very badly for them because they love the Pope.
No matter who the next Pope is, sir, no matter who the next Pope is elected, whoever that may be, what relationship do you hope to have with the incoming Pope?
I think very good. I've had that, but I think very good.
Do you think Russia and Ukraine can get a deal?
It's a chance. There's a very good chance.
Are you happy with how the European Union is handling the tariff right now? Are you happy with Europe right now?
They've been fine. We'll end up having a deal. We're going to ultimately have a deal with anyone. If we don't, we're going to make it anyway. But we're going to ultimately have. The economy is very good. We don't have inflation. Energy is down at the lowest it's been in years. We hit actually $1.98 recently in a couple of states. I think we're doing really well. We're all set. There's a little transition, and that's going to happen. But ultimately, we're going to be the strongest that we've ever been as a nation. Thank you. Thank you.
Stick strong. Trump, you saw your message about Secretary Hegseth
using Signal to discuss those military plans.
Are you bringing up Signal again? I thought they gave that up 2 weeks ago.
There was a new report this weekend that he used in a separate chat that included some family members.
It's the same old stuff from the media. That's an old one. Try finding something new.
Sir, your message to Catholics, sir, mourning the loss of Pope Francis. Your message to Catholics, sir.
We love you all. We're with you all. They were with me during the election, as you know, very strongly. And it's just an honor.
Next, corgi dogs raced head-to-head in an annual corgi derby at a race course in Scotland over the weekend. This year's event saw 4-year-old Corgi Juno race to victory. Reacting to his dog's win after the race, Juno's owner, Alistair Tu, said she came 9th out of 12 last year, so a little bit of an improvement there. And he added, we'll be showering her with treats later. Lucky her. Okay, Tu and Juno were congratulated by Scottish tennis coach Judy Murray, who presented them with a trophy and treats as well. All right, with that, stay with us. We'll bring you more news right after this break.